The Humana Honor Medicare Advantage Plan gives you $1,860 back each year in your Social Security check. Choose coverage that helps you keep more money in your pocket. Learn more at GetHumana.com. Humana, a more human way to healthcare. The Part B Give Back benefit pays part or all of your Part B premium, and the amount may change based on the amount you pay for Part B. Limitations and restrictions may apply. Humana is a Medicare Advantage HMO and PPO organization with a Medicare contract. Enrollment in any Humana plan depends on contract renewal.
This October, Tanger invites you to shop pink and save lives. Your donation of $10 or more to the Breast Cancer Research Foundation helps fuel innovative research that brings us closer to a cure. It also unlocks exclusive savings from brands like Coach, Crocs, Columbia Factory Store, and more to shop all month long. Join us as we mark 30 years of advancing research and empowering hope. Donate and access your exclusive savings today at Tanger.com.
And welcome, everybody, to another episode of Pulse of Fins Nation. I am your host, Lewis Song. I am joined by Chris Early, otherwise known as Duke. I am joined by Eric Wideke. And making his triumphant return, news of his death have been greatly exaggerated. Ron Caniff is back with the Pulse of Fins Nation.
What's up, everybody? What's going on, guys? It's good. It's fun to be back, even a week earlier than I said I'd be. But you said to pop in, so why not? We were already doing audio tests.
So, yep, everybody, Ron is back. He's going to be joining the crew again. So we're really glad to have him on, as usual, as part of the panel. And he'll be doing stuff during the season, during training camp. So good to have you back, Ron. Always glad for you to be joining us to talk some Miami Dolphins. Cap for Life says is giving his usual hello. So we're going to get into the training camp stuff. We're going to talk about what the top training camp battles are. For those of you, by the way, who cannot watch this live or are going to be catching this later or are going to be listening to this on the 3 Yards Per Carry podcast feed, you can't see right now, but I thought that when I got my little on-air sign that I was going to have like one of the best studios, quote-unquote, that of the group here. I had my little my aqua light, my orange light, and the on-air sign and the flag. Listen, Ron just blew everybody out of the water. You should check this out visually as well as audio. You need to see his, for those of you who can't actually see this, I'm just going to describe it for you. He has an aqua wall behind him, and there's a television on that's just rotating pictures of Dolphins players and highlights. It's the greatest thing ever.
Well, I had video on, but Lewis shut me down on that one.
Well, yeah, because monetization. The YouTube algorithm does not appreciate having copyrighted clips on there.
I get it.
So, like I said, we're going to talk about training camp. Let's go into the sponsors real quick, though. PrizePicks.com, that's number one. They are the revolutionary fantasy platform where you can pick up to four, if you are in South Florida, four different players across professional sports leagues. Everywhere else where it is still legal to do so, you can still get your six and your Flex Fridays and all that wonderful stuff. All you have to do is use the promo code 5, that's FIVE, and they will match up to $100 on your deposit when you sign up. Again, it's promo code 5, FIVE. Go to PrizePicks.com, deposit your $100. And let Prize Picks give you 100 of their dollars for you to play with and get started winning today. Also, we're going to go ahead and pull up now the video for Jerseys 305. They gave us a clip of Ethan for him to read off of. So we'll go ahead and we'll let that play.
Hey, it's Ethan Skolnick for the 5 Reasons Sports Network. We've got a great new sponsor that fits with us perfectly. It's called Jerseys305.com. That's Jerseys305.com. This is your home for dead stock and vintage jerseys from the Heat, Panthers, Dolphins, Marlins, and the other local teams. Their mission was born from a passion for wearing jerseys of the old styles and the past players. Jerseys 305 aims to make every fan stand out from the crowd with unique pieces that you don't commonly see anymore. Maybe 10, 15, 20 years ago, but not today. And Jerseys 305 was created by the fans, for the fans. They're diehards just like you. In fact, they're probably listening to this episode right now. So check them out. Jerseys 305, their partnership with 5 Reasons Sports, celebrating with a 10% discount on the next purchase using the code 5 at checkout. Unlock your exclusive savings on the entire vintage collection.
And again, that is jerseys305.com. You can go on, use the promo code 5. You'll get 10% off your order for any vintage jerseys they happen to have on there. All right. So, like I said, we are going to talk about training camp. But before we do that, Mr. Caniff, since you're making your triumphant return, and since you are listening to all these shows, I'm sure that you've been tuning in, seeing everything that's been going on. You're on OnlyFins, by the way, only $3 a month. You can get the best Dolphins talk on the internet. So better than going on to the Twitterverse, as it were. So, but you've been privy to all the discussions that have been had between all walks of Dolphins fandom. So I'm going to go ahead and just get your opinion on this. Sorry, I'm putting you on the spot. Tua's contract negotiations and somewhere cap for life has been triggered beyond belief. So let's where are you on this whole situation?
As far as what's taking so long, when it'll get done, as far as my opinion on what the contract should look like.
All of it.
Okay. I think they'll get it done before training camp, but it feels like it's going to be close. I don't know that I love the agents and agency Tua went with. They don't have a lot of guys there. I kind of feel like I wonder a little bit if, you know, they're trying to just, like, this is our one big fish. Let's make sure we catch it and catch it big. I don't know that, but I don't love that. But putting that aside, I'm sure Greer is just, as he always does, trying to figure out how he can be the guy to get a different deal than the other elite quarterbacks get. But Tua's an elite quarterback. He's been playing at an elite level. And as you can see, besides Mahomes, you can't give me any of these top quarterbacks that got top money plenty of things that you could pick on about their game, whether it's Joe Burrow and his lack of being available, right? Even though he's great. The
thing that everybody talks about Tua is like, Tua's never available. Neither is Joe Burrow. Why are we?
Yeah. Or, I mean, you know, every single player besides Mahomes has plenty of things you could point to and say, no, their game's not good because of ABCD. So I am in the realm that you've already waited a little long and it's costing you more money, especially with that Lawrence deal. I mean, I get that deal really doesn't start for another year or two, so it is different, even though people don't realize that it is different. Still, it's 50-something million a year, and that's what Tua wants, and I think he's earned it, and I think you have to pay the man. That's how I feel about it, because like I said, all these other guys, his peers, right, Hurts, Burrow, and Herbert, and Herbert, who's done nothing but rack up some stats earlier in his career than Tua. And that's the only reason he has those stats. I mean, he definitely hasn't. He can't light a candle to me, besides he throws the ball real hard. And he got that deal. I mean, everybody from his draft class got that deal. So you've already waited a long time. Boy, don't let Prescott get a deal. He'll be paying Tua $60 million. See, but I just say give him the money. Give him the deal that looks like the other guy's deal, and let's move on.
I mean, I'll be honest. I don't know if Dak is going to get a deal yet. I really think they might. Yeah, hold he may out not.
But it's a risk. Dak. It's a game they're playing that Greer's playing a little bit. I mean, he might know too. These GMs, they know a lot more than we know, obviously, about what's going on with other teams. He may happen to know that they're not even close to any kind of deal for Prescott. He may happen to know that, so he's not worried about it. But I don't know. He let some other deals happen before he got Tua signed, so maybe he doesn't know. I'm just not sure.
All right, so we've gotten the Tua talk out of the way now. We've done our consensus.
That's it? That's all we're going to do?
That's all, because we already know
a whole season.
We already know what Duke thinks. Duke already thinks that he's earned the money. Eric thinks that he's earned the money. I think that he's earned the money. Most of the people in our chat, I think he's earned most of the money. But there are some folks out there who are still saying, no, he hasn't earned anything because we haven't won a playoff game, et cetera, blah, 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 blah. But,
well, then Herbert didn't earn it.
No, Lawrence, I don't think he did either.
Lawrence and definitely has.
Trevor Lawrence it, right? Definitely no. Trevor Lawrence definitely didn't earn it. Like, I can't think of a single thing that Lawrence does better than Tua. Not one.
Yeah,
other than he has hair.
Prescott's been paid once. He's going to be paid again. I mean, really, besides rack up a lot of stats, right? I mean, he's a very efficient quarterback. He's kind of similar to Tua in some ways. I mean, what has he done? So that's my point. Besides Mahomes, you could point to every single quarterback and say, oh, yeah, well, that guy hasn't done this, or that guy's not good at this. Or look at Josh Allen. He'll get a new deal soon. It'll probably be closer to like 57 to 58 million when it gets there.
No, he's, it's going to bust the bank. Ron, it's going to bust that bank right away.
Yeah, it's going to bust the bank. He's turned the ball over more than any other quarterback in the league. Like, you can sit there and point and say, Tua hasn't done this and that. Well, All the other quarterbacks have warts. Every single one of them besides Mahomes. They have to put Mahomes aside, of course.
Yep. So, all right. We've done our Tua talk. Let's talk about the actual training camp battles that we're eyeballing. I gave you guys the topic ahead of time, so hope to just kind of get your thoughts in order. We'll go ahead and jump right into this one because we have one in the comments. We're taking the pulse of Finns Nation. That is the point of the show at the end of the day. So Jason Stamps is asking, who wins the right guard and how do you feel about that player? So right now, the position battle, as it were, it would be it's obviously Robert Jones is going to be in that mix. Driscoll is going to be in that mix. There are going to be, I'm trying to think of who else could potentially be in that mix for right guard, and I'm just going to go quickly down the roster here, because the thing with training camp battles is not always just one person versus one other person. It's like a whole bunch of different people are going to be fighting for that same starting job. You have the likes of Matthew Jones, you have the likes of Chasen Hines. All these guys are listed as OL. They're not listed as tackle. The only ones who are listed as tackle on the roster, and these are guys that you know for a fact they're only tackles, just to give you guys an idea: Teron Armstead, Ryan Hayes, Kendall Lamb, Patrick Paul, Keon Smith. All five of those guys only play left tackle, for lack of a better term. Kendall Lamb, I'm sure that if he needed to, he could play right tackle, but he has made it a point to say, no, I want to play on the left. I don't want to play on the right. And so
he definitely doesn't
want to play guard.
He played right tackle in the Dallas game.
But he doesn't want to, though. He's made it up. He'll do it, but doesn't want to.
Well, at this point in his career, want to doesn't matter. If you get on the field and play, you play.
And he's also said that this is his last dance regardless. So after this year, he's retiring. And we don't know what's going to happen with Teron Armstead. He seems to be talking like he's not ready to leave yet. So we'll see what happens on that front. Patrick Paul, listen, you know what? With Patrick Paul's and his need for be rebuilt from the ground up, if Armstead wants to stay one more year, I actually might not lose any sleep over that because he's just that raw, man.
Do you think, just because you brought it up, do you think that maybe this year they just decide to suck it up and play Lamb and Armstead in all? Let's pretend they were both healthy in all 17 games. I mean, laughable, but let's pretend. Do you think they just go ahead and just kind of rotate more for the sake of saving Armstead, or do you think they just run Armstead into the ground unless the game gets out of hand?
I don't think Armstead will get hurt eventually. I don't think Armstead's personal pride would allow for him to be just benched unless he was actually feeling hurt.
I could see that he wants to play probably if he's.
Yeah, I mean, I would assume that you're going to see Teron Armstead out there when healthy at every possible opportunity. I know that he said he's maybe made some indications that maybe he's not retiring after this season after all, but I still lean more in that direction, and so I think he might look at this as like a one last run kind of deal and want to get every snap in that he possibly can.
Duke?
Yeah, I think if Miami gets out to a bunch of big leads, they'll put Lamb in. So they'll both get some good playing time that way. So I'm expecting that.
Would Armstead accept that? Like, because it's a question of whether he's healthy or not. Usually if he ever ends up getting benched, it's because he's in pain. That's the only time I've ever seen it happen.
If you're up 56-0, you're coming out of the game. That's just how it is.
Well, that's 56-0. I understand what you're saying. Okay, I get it. Basically, if it's a Denver blowout situation, okay, yeah, then everybody gets benched. I understand.
I think there's going to be a number of games like that this year. So,
all right.
We got a question real quick, because I don't actually know the answer, so I have this question too. Do you guys know if Tua has the authority to change plays at the line of scrimmage? That really hasn't even been a discussion since McDaniel came here, so I'm not even sure.
Because I didn't know it was a question. Tua has made calls at the line of scrimmage, and I just that they have built in the idea anyway is that each play has a built-in counter for whatever a defense could throw out there. It's like there's a guy in the flat, you could throw it here. Like, oh, you have this guy coming up here. Plus, the ball comes out so quickly that it's difficult for defenses to actually adapt to what the play is anyway. So with that being said, if Tua absolutely needed to change the play at the line of scrimmage, I'm sure he could. I'm sure that there are instances that we could point to if we watched and we went back and watched every single game. But the Tua hasn't really had the need to call a bunch of audibles. Because when we think of audibles, that we go back to the days of NFL 2K and of Madden. Like, you have this little playlist that you have available because you click the Y button or whatever, and now this whole list of audibles comes up and you just click the new play because you don't like what the defense is showing you. And so your quarterback yells on both sides of the field and suddenly everybody starts scrambling and changing their formation on the fly. That's not how it works in the NFL in the real life. Like, you don't just suddenly have Tyreek running to the other end. You have this guy coming over here. Your running back comes up here in this spot. Like, that's not how the audibles work. Like, if you know, if that really happened in real life, obviously the other team knows that you called a very, very different play, and they're going to adjust and start following their guys around. So the way that people think of audibles and stuff like that, I truly don't think is what we think of when we see it on the field, if that makes sense. What Tua does, he's calling out motions. He's calling out guys in the middle and saying, hey, adjust here because this guy is about to do this. But that's probably the extent of it. They probably don't call a completely different play every time they see something that the defense is doing.
So there are built-in portions to the playbook that are that depend on what the defense looks gives you. So if they get to the line and they call a particular type of play, so this is not, again, like you said, like on Madden or wherever, where you're like, oh, well, I'm going to completely switch the play from this to this. There are different – part of what makes the offense so tough to learn, and part of the reason guys like Chase Claypool, even though he's a talented athlete, just couldn't get on the field as much, is because there's parts of it that you have to learn. So you have to learn – not just from the quarterback position, but other positions to read the defense. So if you're a receiver and the defense gives you a certain look, then your route needs to look a certain way with that look, but it may look different on a different look. So I think there's adjustments that are built into that, but not necessarily a change in play. But I also want to bring up, did you guys see the interview of Tom Brady on the Colin Cowherd show?
I've seen clips.
I've seen clips of it, and Brady talks about how they would go into like the game planning of games, and they would look at we have this particular play call. What's the one thing that would blow this play up? And if Brady sees it, then he would check to something else. So he said, I'm not going to get up there to the line, and if we've got a run call to the right, and the only thing that can stop this is a blitzing safety, and I see the blitzing safety, I'm not going to call that play. And so I think, you know, obviously rookie Brady or early starting Brady doesn't have that kind of authority. I think at this point into his career, he's got enough tenure in the system that if he gets to the line and he knows, all right, this is the play that we're going to run, and the defense look that they're giving me is the one thing that's going to blow this play up. I need to change this play, or I need to get into something else. So I think he has a little bit of that authority. But again, I don't believe it's completely like, oh, well, this is a run play. I'm going to turn it into a pass play now.
Like Marino would change the play in the huddle.
Yeah. And well, here's the thing, though. We need to stop using Marino as an example for anything. Because I'm not even sure he's human at this point.
That's a fair point.
So what Marino did, because he's on a level that's untouchable. So, but anyways, I'm just saying, I think Tua has that authority to do that. Now, we've seen some times where like he and Hill have got to the line, and I think we saw it in the Washington game, we saw it in the Baltimore game 2 years ago, where Hill recognizes, hey, this guy's giving me single coverage. I want the ball. And Tua recognized it, and we got those big plays. So I think it was, the third play from scrimmage in the Washington game. You can see Hill over there making gestures, and Tua's making gestures. The next thing you know, we've got a touchdown. So I think there's some of that in there. But as far as, like you're saying, Lewis, about just completely changing, calling his own plays, I don't know. But I think there's adjustments and things built in for him. Sorry for the rant.
No, that's fine. But calling your own plays at the in the huddle, even then, even if he did it in the huddle and said, look, I know coach called this, but we're going to do this instead. Even that I could understand. But once you've lined up at the line of scrimmage, the play is in. You're not flipping it from to a completely different play on the fly. It's just not going to happen. Not unless it was in the only way I could even see that happening is if it was the exact same formation, you know? Like, again, it's not going to suddenly just people running around the field suddenly trying to get into a different formation.
And with, with all the motions and things that they run, it would be you have to get everybody on the same page. You have to
that's suicide.
Six players. The offensive line's kind of in their own little world there, but the other six players have to be on the exact same page. And if they get in there, like, all right, I'm Alec Ingold, I'm the fullback, and I'm supposed to do this particular type of motion. Oh, but now I'm running this other play. It has something completely different, but I need to be on the other side of the formation to run.
Right, I'm going to suddenly line up as a wide receiver.
I don't think those things happen, but I do think they have adjustments built into these things. So it is a far more complex, and I would really love to, if I had a wish that could be fulfilled, I would love to just sit in the room with these guys and, like, watch them watch draft prospects and what they see versus what I see and what these guys see on a play, and have Mike McDaniel say, look, this is how this play is supposed to be run. This guy's supposed to be blocking here. This guy's supposed to be doing that. That stuff is so incredibly fascinating. And it's so, I think that's what makes, it's what makes football so unique, is that kind of stuff. Each person, you have to have all 11 players on the same page. Like, you can play basketball and you've got to work as a team, but if you've got a guy like Jordan or LeBron or whoever, they can just take over and say, you know what, I'm just going to out be better than everybody else on the court because I can be. You can do that. A pitcher can take over a game in baseball, but a quarterback just can't take over a football game without everybody else working together. So, I mean, Tua could go out there and say, hey, I'm just going to wing it and throw it to whoever, but if guys aren't catching, if guys aren't blocking, it doesn't work. So that stuff's just fascinating to me. That was a great question.
Eric, I've seen you unmute your mic twice now, and we kept talking over you. So we can go ahead and have your say.
No. I wasn't unmuting for any particular reason. I mean, as far as that question goes, of course, Tua has the ability to change the play at the line. I mean, I believe there were instances last year where wasn't there a story about McDaniel couldn't get a play in and Tua just called his own play in the huddle and it ended up being a touchdown to Tyreek?
Yeah, I think I remember that actually.
Oh, I remember.
Yeah, McDaniel had said
outright, it's like, you know what, Tua just looked at the defense and said, you know what, I'm going to heave it up to Tyreek, and it turned out to be a score. So he's just like, hey, if Tua sees it, I'm just going to trust him. That's a perfect example right there. Thank you, Eric, for pointing it out. Like, there you go. Perfect example of Tua taking it upon himself to say, I'm going to run this play because, you know what, I see that Tyreek is all alone on an island. I know he's faster than everybody else who's out there. I'm just going to heave it up there, and I'm going to score right here. Like, they called their own touchdowns. They literally said, you know what, we're going to score right here because this guy's not paying attention. And they did. So that's perfect. But we never actually did get to the right guard discussion. So Robert Jones, Jack Driscoll, we know for sure that those guys are part of the discussion. I can't really think of anybody else who we're looking at here who could really actually potentially win that job. I know Lester Cotton is still here. I don't think Lester Cotton is a legitimate contestant for the right guard spot.
No. Are we penciling Liam in as strictly a backup center, or are we saying that he's in the guard next?
I'll be honest with you. I completely forgot about Liam Eichenberg. I had already penciled him in as the backup center. But yeah, now that you mention it, Liam Eichenberg is probably in that group.
I think they'll let him fight for the right guard spot. But you know what I mean? They're not going to tell him, no, it's not you, buddy. It's these
right.
two guys. Get out of here. They're going to let everybody play, especially at the beginning. The beginning of training camp, you'll see or hear reports about a lot of rotation at first. That always happens that first week. You're just seeing different guys playing on different teams. They're trying to see different matchups. They're trying to give everybody, at least let everybody feel like they got a shot, even if maybe in the back of their minds or front of their minds, they knew who they wanted in that spot all alone. But they want everybody to feel like they're in it, of course, and fighting for it. So I think you'll see Ike get in there too. But in the end, it's probably the two guys you mentioned initially, Lewis Driscoll and Jones.
I mean, I don't know who I would. I they're both relative unknowns. I know that Eric Smith, who's a football coach in and of himself, he does film work with Hussam Patel on his show. But Coach Eric is a lot higher on Robert Jones than a lot of us are. And that includes myself. I don't know who
is us? Both of the Erics actually are higher on Rob Jones than at least you. I don't know how strongly the opinions of Ron and Duke are as far as Robert Jones goes. I think most people are kind of lukewarm on him, but I like the work that he did last year. I would kind of give him the inside track to that starting spot.
He's all right.
I actually watched, somebody was kind enough in OnlyFans to put together or put on something someone else had put together, all of Robert Jones's work, either from last year or the last couple years. I mean, it's not a ton of tape. And so I watched it just because I feel like, I guess I'm supposed to watch this. It's off season anyway, right? It wouldn't be normally what I'd be watching, sitting there watching Robert Jones tape for 12 minutes. But I watched him. I'm like, it's kind of a little bit more there than I thought. So I'm not saying he goes in and grabs this right away, Ron, but I have been hearing others talk highly of him lately. I don't know where that's coming from. Maybe he's going to surprise.
Ron, is the film on par with my 14 snaps of Austin
Jackson? No, it was almost 14 minutes, Lewis. Definitely not your 14 Austin Jackson snaps. But however, that turned out that maybe you were right and I was wrong anyway. So
listen, I'm right with an asterisk.
Really were something.
I'm right with an asterisk because again, unfortunately, I guess we're talking about Tua again. It comes right back to Tua getting the ball out in less than 2 seconds. Makes things a lot easier for the offensive line to hold. So
That's true.
See what happens if Austin Jackson has to hold for 3 or 4 seconds. What happens after that? That's what
I'm sure there was plenty of time during the season he had to hold it that long. So.
Those were the games where the offense wasn't flowing very well. I couldn't help but notice.
No, definitely. Absolutely. That would be closer to in the last 4 or 5 games of the season.
But you bring up a good point regarding Austin Jackson and that the team is high on development. And this is Robert Jones. He was brought in as an undrafted free agent in the Flores regime, and now he's remained, and they brought him back this year. So obviously they see something there. then again, they see something with guys that I wouldn't keep on there, like Lester Cotton. I don't think he's going to make the squad. But he got playing time last year. He was top 5 in snaps for all offensive linemen.
I think that was a necessity, not so much a choice.
But they could have picked anybody else, really, and they didn't. I honestly think the right guard spot is Liam Eichenberg's to lose. I think there's a lot of development that they want to go into him. I think of the guys available, he's probably the best fit for that spot. But I'm going to go, I watched Coach Eric's videos. I watched his on Jack Driscoll. I watched his on Robert Jones. So I'm not going to count out Robert Jones. Again, there's something there that these guys like. And he's talking about Driscoll. Again, go watch Coach Eric's, his film study on this. He's with Five Reasons Sports. He did draft coverage with us for the first 2 nights. So good work by him. I think the one thing with Robert Jones is he's just not a great athlete. And I don't know that they value that at the guard position because obviously they think they can get by with whatever. They've not gone after elite athletes except at the center position. And they like athletes at the tackle position. So,
well, let's be fair though, Duke. Robert Hunt was a phenomenal athlete.
Well, I mean, he was already here though. So, I mean, right. He's a good athlete, but he played less than half the snaps last year. And this was still one of the best offenses in football.
Robert Hunt was kind of drafted as well, kind of not knowing what his position was going to be. We didn't know he was going to be a guard when he was drafted. There was kind of that, is he a tackle? Is he a guard kind of thing going on? He's another guy.
Yeah, and they put tackle on the draft card. So,
all right. So let's keep going here. We've got some other topics and positions to talk about. I'm trying to look back because I saw Cap for Life was asking thoughts on EZE special teams return or the slot. Where can he be utilized more in his third down role? Okay, so first and foremost, let's talk about this as a whole, the wide receiver position. The wide receiver position in general, as far as the Dolphins are concerned, that bottom of the roster churn is going to be brutal. Somebody who is really good is not going to make this squad. And I don't know who it's going to be. Just to, once again, we're going to go down this list because we could probably easily point out, okay, these are the guys that we know for sure are making the squad. Tyreek Hill, duh. Odell Beckham Jr., duh. Jaylen Waddle. And after that, actually, you know what? I take it back. Maybe it is more competitive than I thought it was. Because now that I think about it, aside from Tyreek, Waddle, and Odell Beckham, who they just signed, 4, 5, and 6, assuming they only keep 6, wide open. Wide open. Because Braxton Berrios, he's a slot guy. He's the return guy. But they could easily replace him. Eric Azumkama had a strong start, and then he got hurt. River Craycraft, you would keep around for his special team skills and blocking.
He's going to be on. They trust him. They like him. Tua likes him. McDaniel really likes him. He knows the offense. He blocks. He's always where they want him to be in the limited time they use him. He's been productive in the limited time they use him. And for me, he's as close, not a lock like a Waddle Tyreek lock, but as close to that as you get
for me. But can Braxton block? Can Braxton be the special teams
ace? I was surprised they even re-signed Braxton. I will agree that's not a guarantee he stays. He probably will. He's probably the fifth guy.
Okay, but so I don't know. So
I feel better about Craycraft making this team. If I was going to put money on one or the other, I'd put money on Craycraft over Braxton Berrios.
Which leaves the two Washingtons, Azumkama, and then Braylon Sanders. I think we can safely rule out Braylon Sanders. But
probably. Well, now Washington Malik, he was the one that was drafted in the fifth round, right?
The first one, yes.
He was the first one. Yeah. You gotta feel real comfortable as much as they liked that pick. And especially with these new special teams rules and everything, gotta feel pretty comfortable that he's gonna make the roster, you know, given some unforeseen circumstance.
Here's my argument for Azumkama. He's 6'2", 205. He's the only receiver on the roster that's that size. Everybody else, there's a couple guys that are relative same height, but not the same weight. Odell Beckham is the only guy, this other receiver that's listed over 200 pounds. So he's the only receiver they got that's big. I think they like him. They had a package for him. I'm not with you, Ron, on the River Craycraft. I just think it's a numbers game with him. But let me give you another guy I'm just going to throw out here that was on the team in 2022 and actually saw playing time, and that was Braylon Sanders. So I think he's got an outside chance, but don't rule him out either. They brought him back. They've kept him around.
Didn't they initially keep 7? I think just want to keep this in mind. We might be assuming 6. Didn't they initially keep 7 wide receivers last year?
I will have to look.
I feel like I recall that. Like we were all talking about 6, 6, 6, and they surprised us with 7, or maybe it was the year before. And it might not have stayed that way as they rotate guys, even at the beginning of the season. But I feel like that initial cut.
I've already kind of devised a 53-man roster, and I have 6 wide receivers on it. But I put that with a caveat that I had Bradley Chubb on there. And I don't think he's on the active roster to start the season. I think he's on IR or PUP.
Sorry to cut you off, Duke. 6 receivers for Miami to 6? Start the season. Okay. All
right. Yeah. So there might be a 7th receiver in lieu of an additional pass rusher that they make that decision when it's time for Chubb to come back. So just remember, we're looking at the rosters like Chubb's going to be there, but he's not going to be there until he has to come off one of those lists. So that happens.
I haven't gotten that deep into, like, I figured we'd do a show about roster cuts coming up or something.
Yeah, we'll do an
early one and then a later one. But
when training camp pops up, we'll start talking about roster.
But Lewis is right that receiver 4 through 6 position is going to be just absolutely brutal. There's going to be guys that I think get cut and get picked up by other teams. We're not even talking about Taj Washington. Again, I mentioned Braylon Sanders. He's a guy I think they could do it. He was the guy that had the catch and the fumble early in the Lions game.
Yeah, he quickly warmed. He outwarmed his welcome.
Outwarmed his welcome.
Yeah, listen. Eric had to call me on some bad wordplay last week.
Now you got me confused on what the expression is. He wore out his welcome. Yeah, he wore out his welcome. Okay, I guess that's right. For some reason, it doesn't sound right.
And Anthony Schwartz is on the team. He's a veteran player. He was drafted.
Who?
Anthony Schwartz. He was drafted in the third round by the Cleveland Browns. So
I'm just messing. I wanted to give the who gift. I don't sound as cool as Snoop Dogg though.
He fast. That's all you need to know about him. He fast.
So I mean, there's a lot of guys that are going to be fighting it out. I agree with Ron. I think Malik Washington makes the squad. I think that was an investment that they liked. And he was the second highest graded wide receiver by PFF in college last year behind Malik Nabers. So he's a talented guy. I think he's the guy that they will use on returns when they are not deciding to use guys like Achane or Hill or Waddle.
I can't wait to see what we do with the special teams, the offensive special teams. I mean, if you want to call it that, when we're receiving, that should be so much fun to watch. I mean, I know I haven't been on the show. I'm sure you guys had a long conversation about those special teams rules changes, but man, it's gonna change some games. It's gonna be the difference in some games that would have gone the other way. Now, of course, we'll never know, but I see Duke is completely disagreeing with me on this.
Yep, I've said this on the show a few times. They're gonna be starting from the 30-yard line a lot. I think teams are gonna be like, you know what? We don't care about that extra 5 yards. We're going to punt it out of the back of the end zone. We're not going to put the ball in the hands of Achane or Waddle or whoever you got back there. We're just going to let you start 5 yards.
On the margins, Duke, that still can be game-changing.
That can be.
Now, not every game all the time, but if somebody could do the math, how many I'm sure somewhere out there we could find the stat. How many touchdown drives started from the 30 versus started from the 25? What's the difference? The difference might be one or two per team per season. That could definitely be the difference in winning or losing a game and change everything.
The first time Achane takes the ball and takes it the distance, we won't see another one.
I'll tell you where that will change the game, though, that extra 5 yards is – 2-minute drill situations or end of half, you have 20 seconds left after, and you're getting the ball and you're getting it at the 30 instead of the 25. That's going to change the calculus there a little bit on, you know, whether teams take a knee or whether they try to stretch it out, get that field goal, get into field goal range real quick.
This almost to me, when you're talking about, I don't want to sound cocky. I'm going to sound real cocky on this one.
Careful.
For me, taking the Miami Dolphins offense and willingly put them on the 30 is like walking Barry Bonds. You're putting them on base, but I'd rather be them on base than risk him putting one out of the park. That's kind of what it feels like. Now, I know that sounds a little crazy to those that maybe aren't as high on our offense as I am, but that's sort of what that kind of feels like to me. So I don't know that all teams will do it. And also, if you see the way teams are dealing with personnel, I don't think a lot of these teams are convinced that everybody's just going
to... New Balance recently announced the addition of All-American Cooper Flagg to the NB family, joining Cameron Brink and an elite player roster in the brand's mission of growing the game with the next generation of athletes. In part of New Balance's ongoing commitment to supporting athletes off the court, the Boston-based brand plans to work with Cooper on community initiatives in his home state of Maine. To shop the two-way V5, Hesse Low V2, and all New Balance basketball products, visit newbalance.com today.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger. For thousands of appetizing ingredients that inspire countless mouthwatering meals. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week, and up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with points. So you can get big flavors and big savings. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply. At Kroger Pharmacy, CARE is making it easy to get vaccinated. CARE is helping you stay protected from flu, COVID, and RSV. Seasonal vaccines are available 7 days a week with evening hours. CARE is giving you a shot at staying healthy this season. Walk in whenever is best and get multiple vaccines in one visit at your local Kroger Pharmacy. So come and get the protection you need while protecting those around you. Kroger Health, a world of care, is in store. Visit Kroger.com/vaccines for more. Restrictions and exclusions apply. See site for details.
I'd be letting everyone have it on the 30. I think there might be less of that. Honestly, there might be less of that. And you know how it's a lot about analytics right now, too, in the NFL. So let's, and they don't really have real analytics on this yet because we haven't done it yet. It would all just be simulations to this point. But as they get real analytical data, I'm just curious what that looks like and what, when they decide I'm going to go ahead and put these guys on the 30 versus we're going to cover. Man, it's just, I think there's a lot of unknowns there.
I think if you're a top 10 defense, you're rooting it out of the back of the end zone. If you're like a bottom quartile defense, you're going to take your chances. So if you are the Baltimore Ravens defense, you don't care about that extra 5 yards because you're going to get the stop more than likely. If you are, you know,
I'm going to stop you on this one though. I know it seems like, well, you could do this from the 25, but let's take away touchdowns and just say, if you're going against an offense like Miami and you start them on the 30, two plays and they're in field goal range. I mean, they could do that
from the 25.
I understand they could do that from the 25, but it still decreases the likelihood. I know I keep using Miami as the example, and not all offenses are Miami, just like not all quarterbacks are Mahomes, right? we can't always compare everything to Miami, but I have to look at it from Miami's point of view and the way teams will play us. I think they will be a little more hesitant to continuously just stick us on the 30, even though Miami has a lot of players that could break one. And you, as a team too, you might have feel a lot better about your special teams coverage versus your defense sometimes too. You might say, you know what? I'm not going to put them on the 30. I'll just keep them at the 25 and risk it. Or, you know, I just think there's going to be a lot of interesting things. I think it's interesting that you seem to think that most teams are going to let somebody fly, take it to the house once or twice and be like, nope, not doing that anymore. So it's just interesting to see how that's going to turn out.
With Miami, it's going to be different. If you're a bad offense, right? So Miami plays Tennessee week 4 on Monday Night Football. They're not expected to be a great offense. So let's say they're a bad offense in week 4. If you're Jason Sanders, you're like, do I want to give a guy a chance to flip this game? Or do I want to put Will Levis at the 30-yard line and trust my defense?
I mean, if you're Miami, apparently you want to keep Will Levis off the field.
Well, this is a bad example, dude.
I'm just saying,
of all the teams that I can think of, well, let's say the Patriots then. Let's take the Patriots. So they can get them.
Okay, I like that one.
So you got Jacoby Brissett. You got Drake May. You got a couple of rookie receivers. Hunter Henry. You're like, you know what? Start at the 30-yard line. We don't care. We don't think you're going to get more than 20 yards on this drive anyway. Last year we played the Giants, and I think they had one drive that went like 10 plays and gained 10 yards or something. It was something ridiculous. So, I'm booting the ball out of the back of the end zone. I'm not giving them a chance for a playmaker to touch the ball and whiff on one tackle, and that's a score. I'm like, you know what? Start on the 30. We think you suck. So I think Miami's going to boot the ball out of the back of the end zone quite a bit, especially if this Weaver defense is the way we expect it to be.
Okay.
I personally, before we move on to the next thing, I'm going to have to see it to believe it. I still think that they're looking at Braxton as the designated returner, and I'm going to have to see some other guys who are more important. I'm sorry to say it that way. I need to see people who are more important doing returns in training camp. I need to see Achan out there. I need to see Tyreek out there. Holland out there.
I mean, honestly have Malik Washington and Jalen Wright do it.
They could.
It would still be.
It would still be
two players you'd really have to watch. We don't even have to send Tyreek and Achane out or Achane out there. Like we don't even have to do that.
But that's what everybody's been talking about.
The return.
But that's what everybody's been talking about, though, Ron, is that the very concept that Tyreek could be out there taking the return because that could take it to the house.
I think you reserve that for number one to see, like Duke says, and I say, how's this even going to work out? And is this even worth it? And I don't think that data is going to be available yet. So I think teams are going to be hesitant at the beginning of the season to throw their star of stars, $100 million wide receivers out there. I just don't think they're going to do it right away. But as the season goes on, more data compiles, maybe that data states that it's advantageous to do it. Or maybe you want to start at the 30. So you're like, I'm going to put Tyreek there and just dare him to kick the ball to us. Yeah, they just kick it out of the back of the end zone. But or it's playoffs, or it's a prime game towards the end of the season, and you're thinking, I'm taking the chance to put my best players there. There's several different strategies with this.
It's week 18. You're playing on the road in New York. They've got a really good defense, and you might need that game to secure home field. You might need to secure the division, whatever that may be. Yeah, I'm absolutely throwing Tyreek out there. What do you got to lose? I mean, if you lose the game, you're maybe playing on the road again. Is that a good thing? Like you said, that might be the factor. Say, you know what, we're going to start on the 30. We're going to throw Tyreek and Achan and Waddle. We'll throw all three of them out there. And you hit one of them, and somebody's going to do something magical, and they're just going to kick it out of the end zone and be done with it. So,
all right. Yeah. So we're going to get into the next one. Somebody asked about the tight end room. Not a lot less tight ends to choose from here, but we'll just go briefly over that list here. So we have, just for everybody to get a reminder, Tanner Connor is still here. Jody Fortson Jr., who came over from the Kansas City Chiefs. Julian Hill, who is in his second year with this offense. Hayden Rucci, I don't know much about him. He's a rookie out of Wisconsin. Jonnu Smith, obviously Durham Smythe. So
we have two tight ends.
We have two tight ends for sure. Durham Smythe and Jonnu Smith. Now, the third guy, and here's the thing, though, because Alf has made the case, and some of the other guys on 3 yards per carry have too. Jody Fortson is a very interesting prospect for Miami because he's been very effective as a red zone weapon for Patrick Mahomes. Now, this is where it becomes, what does Miami value more? Does Jody Fortson have the fortitude to be able to act as a blocker? Is he better at it than Julian Hill, who himself showed some potential last season? So I guess the real battle there is going to be between Fortson and Hill. I don't think Tanner Connor really has a leg in this race unless they try to turn him back into a wide receiver, which I don't think they're going to do. So it becomes Julian Hill and Jody Fortson. I don't know if any of you guys have any thoughts on these guys.
No, no, I'm just kidding. I guess we're here to do a show to have some thoughts. I feel like we're solid with Jonnu at one. We're solid with Smythe at two. And then it wouldn't completely shock me if the rest of the players, the three and four, assuming they keep four guys, aren't even any of these guys on the roster. I mean, I'm not going to say that they're terrible, but I mean, we've seen Julian Hill. We've seen Tanner Connor come out. It's like these are like almost becoming like backup, bench warmer retreads, right? It's just over and over again with these guys. So
I feel like
Fortson's more interesting for sure, but is he only interesting because it's the grass is greener, the guy we really haven't seen a lot from yet? Man, there is nothing. There's excitement even in the depth of most of these units throughout this team. This is not one of those units that has that. It's greatly improved by getting Jonnu, but anything behind Smythe is just, who knows?
Eric, do you? I personally feel like that Ron is underselling Julian Hill. What are your thoughts?
I hate to just sound so dismissive about the tight end room, but it really speaks to the depth of weapons that you have at all of the other positions. Because honestly speaking, the third tight end in this offense, Is that guy really going to get targets over your top five receivers, Devon Achane, when he's on the field? Like, at some point, sure, the idea of Jody Fortson is cool in the red zone, but, you know, who are you taking off the field to put him on? And that might happen maybe four, five times, six times in a year that you would want Jody Fortson on the field over some of your other playmakers. So it just, you know, I hate to minimize it, and those guys do change games when they make those plays. But the third tight end in this offense, there's already so many mouths that are going to be needing to be fed that I can't see that guy making a huge impact regardless of who it is. But I guess if I had to pick a name, I would say it'd be interesting to see what Fortson can do.
All right, so we're kind of throwing Julian Hill to the wolves then? That's what I hate to make it sound like that. It's more dramatic for headlines.
Go ahead, Duke.
Oh, I was just going to say it's going to come down to special teams for those guys. I think Eric's right. There's not going to be a lot of mouths to feed on the offense. You're not expecting Fortson to come in or Hill to come in and get 50, 60 targets. I think Jonnu Smith is going to be that guy. And I think Durham Smythe is going to be that kind of that safety valve, the trust guy that Tua likes. But the other two, they're going to have to carve their name out on special teams. That's where Ron was talking about that coverage. I mean, they're going to be starting closer to the other team now. It's going to be closer to where the ball lands. So it's going to be about the angles and tackling. So if those guys want to make the squad, they're going to get some chances on offense, but it's going to be through special teams. Same with a lot of those other receivers, not just, you know, we talked about the return game, but it's going to be a lot with how they do on punt coverage, how they do on kick coverage, how they do in these other areas. Because, I mean, this is obviously something that stuck with the team. They brought in Cam Brown and Saron Neal as special teams guys. And you kind of knew when they signed them, like, you're not here to be a starter on defense. You're here to play special teams. So if these guys want to get on the 53, they need to, in the three preseason games, they need to stand out on special teams.
All right, fair enough. Paris Stevens was mentioning that Smith is the X factor this year. I'm guessing he means Jonnu, but I'm going to pivot to another Smith. So I believe there's going to be a battle as far as the Miami Dolphins secondary goes. So all we've been hearing is that Miami needs another safety, right? We've been wondering, where's Quandre Diggs in this whole discussion? Why haven't we got Justin Simmons yet? I personally think that Miami feels like they are covered as far as personnel. It's just a question of who's going to be playing where and when. So just going down the list here, again, Miami has a lot of DBs currently available and ready to go. And that's not even counting the guys who are actually listed as safety specifically. So if I'm just going to go based on corners, right, just on corners, I have 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11. That's including one guy who's listed as a DB, but even then, that's 11. And then you come all the way down here to safety, and you have 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. So you have 17 guys duking it out for those secondary spots. That's a lot of guys in the secondary you're going to have to weed out. So with that being said, we have Cam Smith, who was one of Miami's top picks last year. He didn't get to play because Vic Fangio has an issue with young people. So we
think that's the reason.
Listen,
maybe he wasn't ready to play. I mean, really don't know for sure.
The reason I think that's bullcrap is simply because his alternative was Eli Apple, who literally stood there in the end zone and let Trent Sherfield catch a pass that had been batted up in the field. Instead of going up to go get it, he was content to say, yeah, I stopped him. You stopped him the first time, dingbat. What happens with the ball still alive? Go get that football. So
Sherfield out of bounds.
That's all you got to do. Just shove him. Nope, didn't do it. And not only that one play alone should have disqualified Eli Apple, and at the very least should have given Cam Smith the opportunity to show, I can do a better job than that guy. And it didn't. They kept throwing Apple out there like he was the consensus pick.
Didn't he have two Cam picks? Smith, he had two picks that game, though.
Say again?
He had two picks that game. Yeah.
Oh,
yeah. Cam Smith will get a shot this time, though. Like, regardless of what happened last year, he's getting his shot for some playing time this year, I believe.
I mean, that's fine. That's what I'm saying, though. There's a battle here in the secondary because you have Jalen Ramsey. He's obviously going to be all over the place. At least that's what we're speculating. We're going to have Kendall Fuller. He could also end up being all over the place, which begs the question now, if everybody's just kind of roaming, that's kind of cool if you think about it, but where does that fit Cam Smith? Because we're speculating that Cam Smith is strictly a boundary corner,
yes,
which would make it so that Jalen Ramsey can roam the field. Kendall Fuller has done boundary. He has also done slot corner. You have Kader Kohou, who has done both. You have Nick Needham, who has done everything, including safety.
Yeah, I think Nick Needham this year is a safety. I think that's their plan for him.
So this leaves the question, okay, so where at this point, how much playing time does Cam Smith get? I'm not even making the question of whether or not he makes the roster. My question is, how much playing time does he get?
That's going to depend. And when I say he's going to get a shot for playing time, I guess I really mean he's going to get a shot to show he can do something in training camp and preseason. That's where he's going to shoot, because Miami has their starters. And unless something bad happens, Cam Smith's not really one of them, honestly. So it's really for him a matter of how comfortable does he make everybody in the defense during preseason and training camp. And that will determine how much we see him on the field. But he's going to get that chance. Whereas last year, I guess we feel like he really wasn't being given a true chance. Or many feel like, now that the season is over, looking back at it, he wasn't really ever going to get the real chance. He was always just going to be on the sidelines regardless.
Yeah, I think Cam Smith is going to play a decent amount this year, almost out of necessity, because I don't think the question of Jalen Ramsey moving around is a question of, oh, it would be nice, it would be a luxury if he moves around. I think in this defense that Anthony Weaver has, it's going to be a necessity for Jalen Ramsey to move around. So I don't think you can just plug him in as he's going to strictly be a boundary corner. And that leaves you with likely Kendall Fuller and Cam Smith as your two boundary guys. And you look at the depth behind Cam Smith, of the guys that are depth that we've mentioned, who's the other guy that could really play the boundary? We saw a Caterco who looked like on the outside. I don't think any of us wants to do that again.
Hold on. Caterco who sucked against Stephon Diggs, the best route runner.
He's not a boundary corner, Lewis. He's a slot guy. And there's nothing wrong with that.
Yeah.
There's nothing wrong with that. He's a good slot. Who's really the competition behind Cam Smith? Is it Ethan Bonner?
If he's on the 53, then he can be on special teams.
Yeah, I didn't hate the few snaps that he got against Kansas City, but ultimately I think Cam Smith is going to play out of necessity. And I think that he is going to be one of the most integral pieces to this defense this year, because so much in the secondary hinges on him being good. Because if he is good and he's not a problem right away, that's the one question that you have in the secondary is answered. And I think that kind of takes you from a really good unit to a great unit. If he works out,
Duke.
Well, I've got a question to pose for the chat and everything else. But I think Smith's going to be fine. I think it was a matter of Fangio wanted veterans that he could trust. And I think that's what it was. Even though Kohu's a young guy, it was his second year. And I think it was I know that Fangio plays a lot more zone, and that wasn't necessarily a good fit for Kohu. But I think Smith's going to be fine. He's going to get plenty of snaps, 500 to 600 snaps maybe. Baltimore had, I think, 7 DBs take at least 35% of the snaps last year. Some of that was due to injury. But there, it's going to be a very secondary or second level centric defense, which is why we didn't, we've seen the smorgasbord of defensive tackles come in versus, they went out and got Jordan Poyer. They signed Marcus May after June 2nd. They signed, they brought Elijah Campbell back. They want their secondary guys, and I think it's going to be really good. My question would be, so let's say a guy like Ethan Bonner steps up. I mean, Greer has a history of finding these undrafted defensive backs. What if he steps up and makes it tough for somebody to get cut? Of all the guys that are currently on the roster, I think Cater Kohu has the absolute most and best trade value of anybody that could be traded. Yeah, you could trade Jalen Ramsey. You're not going to do that. You're not trading Ethan Bonner because nobody wants him. What if they get to a point and somebody has forced Kadarko off the roster in that regard? Do you think someone will take him in a trade? And we're not talking about a haul here. We're talking about maybe a sixth round pick or something. But that's an idea that I have floated around in my mind, thinking, you know, he was a good fit in the man heavy scheme. He should be a good fit here. And if he's earned his spot, you don't trade him. I'm just saying, if somebody pushes him off, would you make that move?
Go ahead, Eric.
I'm sorry. I'll let you go, Lewis, because my answer is going to be really short. The long and the short of it is I wouldn't. I don't think I would, because I'm still a little. I've still got some trauma from 2 years ago with all that cornerback depth that we thought we had, and everybody got hurt in camp. And I just, when you have good depth in the secondary, I don't think you just, I wouldn't deal from it.
No, I wouldn't trade him either. But more than, it's not just that I wouldn't trade him. I wouldn't expect to get anything for him. He hasn't logged enough NFL time. Quite frankly, I disagree with the premise. I think if anybody had more trade value at this point than Kohu, I think Needham would be the guy easier to trade, just because he's had more playing time. He has more film.
He's coming back off of an injury, so you don't know.
No. That was last year.
But he didn't play much last year.
They didn't need him.
If Kader Kohu gets out of camp, all right, and out of preseason game three or whenever the cut down day is, and he's D or CB6, and you know he's not going to get much playing time because he's been surpassed, would you want to try to get something for him? I mean, you don't want that guy just to be a special teams guy. Now, I say that with the caveat of I don't believe it's going to happen. I don't believe he's going to be DB6. I'm just saying, if that happens, I think he's got more value. He has more value than Smith. You're not trading Fuller or Ramsey. I think he's got more value than Needham. Just a thought.
Can I just say how absolutely wonderful it is to finally have an offseason in this decade where the answer to this question of who is the guy that we're going to get rid of is no longer Noah Igbinoghene. I just wanted to throw that out there.
He's finally gone.
Because how many times have we said, well, maybe that's why we can trade Noah. Maybe we can cut Noah. Oh, my God. How many times did we talk about that?
No, I always said he was going to pay.
And they traded him and got something for him.
They traded him for Kelvin Joseph, who does nothing, and left.
If you can get something for Noah, you can get even better for Kader, but I do not, under any circumstance. I think all this lost faith in Kader is just it's too much, man. I feel like he's coming back hard this season and going to really push for real playing time versus let's trade him because he's a sick guy. I'm just
looking at the numbers because, you know, Cam Smith's going to get his. It's really, in my opinion, he's fighting for CB4 at this point. Now, do they decide to move Ramsey around and move him as kind of just an overall defensive back piece where he's playing safety at times, and then you still need three corners? So let's say they go with a heavy dime package and they got six DBs and you've got Poyer and Holland, and Ramsey is kind of your amorphous player, and then you've got Kohu and Smith and Fuller as your three actual corners manning up on people. That's the spot he's in. But I mean, if it's going to be a situation like, well, we found somebody that's going to replace him and going to get these snaps, somebody's going to want him.
I guess here's my big question. Most of the time our defense, or a lot of time our defense, is going to be two safeties, three corners. That's a very common defensive roster or a field roster.
That's the nickel right there.
Yeah, nowadays, in that situation, so you got Fuller, you got Ramsey, right? Let's just say we're going classic. We're not moving Ramsey around. So who's the slot cornerback for the Dolphins?
Fuller.
Who?
Fuller.
So you put Smith on the outside. Yeah, I don't know. And they sit Kohu.
The investment is there with Smith that they don't have with.
I don't know about that.
I think this, given how much playing time Anthony Weaver is historically given to his defensive backs, I think we're going to be in six defensive back looks a lot more often than we might realize.
Then there's no way.
Baltimore, I think last year was like 78% nickel with five DBs on the field. The other thing to remember is that Jalen Ramsey played in the slot for the Rams, and he played quite a few snaps there his last year with the Rams. So don't be surprised if they put him in a position where you have Fuller and then whoever else on the outside, and he moves inside.
So maybe I've just missed something. So Fuller was brought onto this team to be a slot cornerback, not the boundary cornerback?
No, he plays both.
Yeah, so I'm telling you right now, I'll bet anything, the first time you see on the field, barring injury, five players where it's three cornerbacks and two safeties, it's going to be Ramsey, Fuller, and Kohu is playing the slot. That is just, I feel pretty strong about that. I know that he had problems last year, but it was almost all exclusively at the edge, at the boundary. Like, Kohu to me is the starting cornerback.
I think they'll move them around. I think it'll depend on personnel a lot too. So for example, week two, you get Buffalo. I don't know who Jacksonville has week one. I'm not too awful worried about their personnel, but you have Buffalo and they don't have any receivers, right? They've got Marquez Valdez Scantling. They've got Chase Claypool. They've got Curtis Samuel. They've got Keon Coleman, who's a rookie. But they've got two pretty good tight ends. I think they're going to become a 12 or 22 personnel team. If that's the case, I want Ramsey inside. I want him covering Dalton Kincaid.
Yeah, no, I understand that. Now, when we talk about play per play, game per game, matching up, things are going to change. But everybody has a base defense, right? Or base unit. And I think in a base defense where we have five defensive backs, Kohu is one of those five. I think that the Dolphins believe that he would be one of those five. I don't know what percentage of times that, you know, formation happens, but I feel like he's one of those five. It's an interesting conversation. I didn't think we were coming here today to, you know, talk about is Kohu a guy we could trade. I'm glad you brought up the question. This is the kind of offseason stuff.
And again, it's fun and interesting,
and it kind of out of left
this
field.
This is not a. Should they do it right now? If somebody comes in and says, hey, we'll give you a third for Kohu, I'm taking a third. They're sorry.
Of course.
I'm saying at the end of camp, if he's CB5 and he's been outplayed by somebody, that's a move you make
you're saying he's been outplayed by obviously Fuller and Ramsey.
Somebody else.
But he's been outplayed by Smith and somebody else.
Let's say he's been outplayed by Smith.
Somebody would have to really come on strong to make that happen, I think. That would be exciting.
What if it's Smith or Needham, though? We're talking about...
No, but Smith, for him to be five, Smith's already outplaying him. And I again, believe that Needham is actually going to be more of a safety. But, that means that somebody else above Smith outplayed him, and it probably wasn't Needham. Like, it would have to be Bonner or something.
But we brought up this point. I mean, how many years ago, and Lewis, I know you and I have talked about this in years past, when we were looking at training camp, and we're like, I hope this undrafted guy makes it, because that'd be great, and we need somebody to step up. And now we're talking about, we've got too many players at positions, so.
Oh, yeah, we have a very, last year we felt like we had the most talented roster, and I think we're probably about that this year. Very talented rosters that the Dolphins have ever had. I don't know that it's more talented last year, but
it's not just about being talented though. It's also about being deep. And that was even Eric brought it up a couple years ago. We thought we were so deep at corner. We thought we would never run out of corners, and lo and behold, we ran out of them
before the season started. Well, that wasn't at the Byron Jones. He's coming back.
That was
back.
The Byron Jones year. Back. Yeah, he's I was like, yeah, he'll be he's back. He'll be back. No, he didn't come back.
McDaniel learned a valuable lesson as a rookie head coach that season, didn't he?
But that's one good thing about Kendall Fuller is thus far in his career, he's not really missed a lot of time. So that's a guy that you can count on. And he replaced X, who tends to miss lots of games. So that's one thing. I think that's one thing. They're not only looking for depth, they're looking for availability.
You know, Jason Stance brings up in the chat before we go. I completely forgot that Marcus May signed with Miami. So,
he's a safety. So
yeah, he is a safety, but that's just it. But if we're looking at Nick Needham as a safety, so I guess
He's the third. Nick Needham to me is the third safety, right, or the fourth?
No,
safety.
No, he would be fourth. Poyer.
Fourth safety. Yeah. So yeah, there you go.
So Needham is safety 4 and corner 6.
Yes. Yeah, I think that would probably be it. Yeah, that makes a lot of sense.
And Jason brings up a point in the chat too. Holland played slot corner in college. So he's another guy that you can bring from the safety position and play coverage if you need him to. They've got a lot of stuff that they can do. I mean, I don't know. I'm loving it. I'm getting more excited.
Yeah, I think the secondary might be the most improved unit for the Dolphins coming into the season. I mean, I think we could all agree that the biggest downgrade would be defensive line with missing Wilkins. No Chubb yet. Phillips coming off of an Achilles. I mean, that's the biggest question mark for the team. But the most exciting for me, even though they upgraded wide receiver with OBJ and they upgraded tight end, obviously, with Jonnu, is, man, that secondary. They made changes. Swapping out Fuller for X, big. A move that no one in the NFL is talking about beyond Dolphins fans.
Ron, huge. You didn't want OBJ.
And then grabbing, I didn't, but I see it now. At first, I was like, I don't get it. I don't know. And then when you really start digging into, and we are not supposed to be talking about this right now, when you really start digging into.
I got to catch you on it. I don't mind.
You
went into OnlyFans. You went into Twitter. You were like,
I wasn't big on it. I wasn't big on it. The biggest thing I like about him is his catch ratio. Like, I mean, if the ball hits his hands, the man's catching it. And he's dropped like one pass in the end zone in his whole damn life that we considered an actual drop. That's the kind of clutch we need. And I kept on saying I really felt like the issues towards the end of the season when Waddle and Tyreek were kind of trading off getting hurt, or both were hurt and neither were playing up to their par and some missed games, etc. I really felt like the offensive line not holding up should have been the address and not addressing. That was why I wasn't big on OBJ, by the way, more than anything. But I get now that by having him as the third, that's really what they needed, because when they could maybe kind of single on Waddle because he wasn't fully healthy, or Tyreek wasn't even there, or Waddle wasn't there, and a lot of times they weren't, they just really weren't respecting Tua anymore. They were just blockading his guy that he wanted to go to and making him have to find another option, and the offensive line not holding the block, and there you go, it cascaded. So instead of fixing the offensive line, they said, no, let's make it to where teams can't do that to us now. And when I saw that and the player they got and the money, come on, I thought we were going to pay $10 million a year for this guy. I mean, he really took a huge discount to come here. I mean, all that combined, I'm sold on it. I am sold on it, and I was not at first. I agree, Lewis. Yeah.
And McDaniel also brought up a guy we've discussed earlier this evening is Jonnu Smith. So he's looking for guys that separate and get open quick. And when the other two guys are covered, you know, I've seen some video. I've seen some guys post stuff on YouTube about showing this stuff. You see Braxton Berrios, you see Chase Claypool, you see these guys, and they're not open. They're not necessarily running the right routes or whatever's going up, and they're covered. And Tua's like, I've got to throw the ball to somebody. Well, now you're throwing your wide receiver 3, your possession receiver is Odell Beckham Jr., and you've got Jonnu Smith, who's, you know, one of the best yak tight ends out there. So, man, it's getting me excited. Can't wait.
Yeah, I mean, we're going to have – and another thing to think about with the offense too, again, we weren't supposed to be talking about this, but it's exciting, is when you started last season, you had Mostert and then you had Wilson, right? But Achan was like – I mean, he didn't even play the first game. And we heard that was because maybe he just really wasn't getting it yet.
He was hurt.
Or showing that he was getting it. Yeah, plus he got hurt in the preseason game. But then all of a sudden it took some time and you saw what this guy could do. And then unfortunately get hurt, man, right out of the gate. Now we have those two guys, and now Jalen Wright's the guy, he's a third guy that we're like, how are they going to work him in? What are they going to do there? How's that going to happen? So that's exciting. And then now we actually have two tight ends. I mean, we were starting with a backup tight end last year. Now we have a bona fide starter. He's not the top tight end in the league, but he's a bona fide starter. Definitely an upgrade. And you know, the offense, the wide receiving room just got faster. You know, Tyreek's healthy, Waddle's healthy. Hopefully it goes into the season that way. I mean, it should be gangbusters right out of the gate. Plus, whatever new wrinkle McDaniel has for us in store this time. Last year, it was like the little short motions that you are seeing tons of teams copy, and you're really going to see a lot of that this year. I think you're going to see that all over the league in most offenses.
They put it in Madden.
Yeah, of course. I mean, it was something so small but significant, right? I mean, it wasn't wildcat changing, but it was definitely something that other teams were like, how come we never thought of doing that before?
And so apparently the stance that Hill takes, that was his concoction. He came up with that on his own. That wasn't a McDaniel doing that. Hill just did that, and they're like, hey, keep doing that. So he's already like, what, 5'9"? He's hiding behind the tight end. All of a sudden, he comes sprinting out and then takes off running. What are you going to do?
It's like the same as McDaniel like wrote the script, but the actors go in and change the words and make it even better. So it's the same exact concept. McDaniel came up with this, and then a great player in Tyreek said, well, what about this? And there you go.
And by the way, Ron, Tyreek is another discussion that we will have in the future. But for this show,
why do we even need to have it?
Because you were the one who wanted to have it.
Oh, you mean about future years? Yeah, we can.
Okay,
we'll have that later on. Yeah, we can't get into that. This show will be 3 hours. Yeah, let's just make up for every conversation Ron hasn't had for the last 4 months.
Exactly.
All in one show. We'll just keep doing this until everybody drops out.
All the stuff that I'm debating. Yeah. Back to the old days on Squish the Fish, where we argued who was over Ryan Tannehill.
Yeah, exactly.
All right. Everybody, thank you all so much for joining us. It was a really fun show. We're going to go ahead and call it here. Make sure, once again, if you haven't already done so, make sure you go to prizepicks.com. Use the promo code 5, that's FIVE. They will match up to $100 on your deposit when you sign up. And, of course, jerseys305.com. Use that promo code 5 again, and you get 10% off your vintage jerseys, whatever jersey you happen to see on there that you like. So that's it. We are done here. Everybody, have a great week. We will see you next week, where we will basically be tormenting Ron with all the things that I disagree with him on. Have a good night, everybody.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger. For thousands of appetizing ingredients that inspire countless mouthwatering meals. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week and up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with points. So you can get big flavors and big savings. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply. When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger. For thousands of appetizing ingredients that inspire countless mouthwatering meals. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices. Plus, extra ways to save. Like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. And up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with points. So you can get big flavors and big savings. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.